This is To Your Health with Dr. Chad Kingsley, Mojave County Public Health Director, and Roger Galloway. To Your Health keeps you informed on all the health issues facing our country. Be healthy. Stay healthy. Here's To Your Health.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Roger Galloway, and we're going to be getting into a very interesting topic here that affects almost everyone listening. Our guest and the person that's going to be taking us through the subject matter that we're going to be having today is the Environmental Health Manager of Mojave County Health Department, and that's Tara Static. And she's responsible for the management, development of things like monthly reporting, budget staffing, workforce development, division policy and procedure, et cetera, within the health department. And she also has three primary programs she works with: the Food Safety and Sanitation Program, Vector Nuisance Program, and the Smoke-Free Arizona Program. All of those, of course, extraordinarily important and valuable to our community and to our county. So, Tara, the first thing I really want to get to in kind of a general way, and then you'll kind of guide us into things that are more specific with your answers, is talking about some of the regulations that the county health department has regarding sanitation, safety, et cetera, dealing with hotels, motels, restaurants, food trucks, things of that nature. And I know that a lot of people don't even know where your enforcement begins and ends. Could you explain that so people might understand a little bit better?
Good morning, and thank you for having me. But and speaking about our food safety and sanitation program, that really encompasses a lot of different permit types. We have in Mojave County about 2,000 different permit types. About 75% of those are food establishments, so restaurants, retail food stores, school kitchens, things of that nature. But we also have other types, which include campgrounds and RV parks, schools, nursing homes, lodging facilities, pet groomers and kennels, and then also public and semi-public pools and spas.
That's a lot.
That is a lot for the county.
Do you have enough people to enforce?
You know, we have a very limited staff. We have about 6 different inspectors. We've been understaffed for quite some time now. And considering, you know, not just the number of permits, but many establishments require 2 or even 3 inspections per year. So, and add those to the temporary events that we also inspect the food vendors out of those locations. So we have the Mojave County Fair coming up next weekend with, you know, maybe about 20 different food vendors that have to be inspected. So we're pulling staff from our other service areas like Havasu and Bullhead as well to cover that.
Oh, okay, let's take an example of an enforcement procedure that you might go through. Let's say, do you wait to be called, or do you show up unannounced? Do you tell the restaurant or the hotel or whoever that you are coming, or how does that work?
Well, no, not necessarily. And how it works is we don't really view it as enforcement. We view it more as educational. So what our purpose and our role is, I mean, yes, we provide inspections to identify problem areas, but really we're there to help our business partners in the community, these different permanent establishments. Our role is to help them come into compliance and maintain compliance with the standards that have been set forth by the FDA and that are adopted by state legislature. They've been adopted by Arizona. So that's what we do. So our inspection process is this: depending on the type of food, not just food establishment, but depending on the type of establishment, they might have between 1 and 3 inspections per year. We schedule them about 6 months apart, but we do not show up announced. We do not schedule the appointment per se, so a lot of people think they're surprise inspections. We're not allowed to conduct surprise inspections per se. We have 3 different inspection types: your routine inspection, which is your regularly scheduled inspections, be it once a year or 2 or 3 times a year. We also have follow-up inspections. So if a violation is found during the regular inspection, the inspector will go back in a prescribed number of days, so whether it's 24 hours or 30 days, depending on what the violation is, and go back to make sure that that violation was corrected. So that's a second kind of inspection. The other type of inspection we do is really considered an investigation. So if we get a complaint from the public, we go out and investigate that complaint. And we're only looking for those issues or items that the complainant has mentioned in their complaints. We cannot do, and the same with the follow-ups, we can't do a full inspection from those. The only full inspections are their regularly scheduled inspections, or if the establishment requests a follow-up inspection because they want to perhaps get a better rating.
Let's use an example of an egregious violation. Let's say somebody calls you and says that they were at this hotel and all of the sheets were dirty. They claimed it was clean. It was not. It was filled with debris or whatever. I'm going to an extreme here. You follow up by showing up to see if that's true. When you get there, do you say, I want to see two or three rooms? Or how do you handle that?
No, that would be a complaint investigation. So specific to hotels or lodging establishments, we require a room number, what room they stayed in. And then we're only allowed to investigate that particular room. We can't go investigate other areas of the hotel.
What if you show up and the manager or the owner says, this is not a good day, can you come back tomorrow?
Rules and regulations require, and part of their permit acknowledges that we are allowed to come in and inspect their facility.
Okay, so they basically have to give you the key to the room and say, all right, this is the room you're talking about, et cetera.
Right.
And what happens if you show up and you go to that room and it's exactly like the complaint alleged?
Well, then that's noted in the investigation and the report that they have to correct those issues. They're given what's called a notice of violation, that these are the statutes and regulations that they're violating. And then they're given a follow-up date. We'll be back in so many days to follow up and make sure that these have been corrected.
I don't know. This was before you, but I recall in recent years there was a hotel in the Kingman area that had a lot of problems. I think they shut it down at least temporarily for a while. I'm pretty sure I'm correct. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I was a reporter at that time, and of course the public needs to know about those things, and they don't want to go there, and you want the owners to comply. So you have limited power and authority. Would that be correct?
Yes. We're really bound by what Arizona Revised Statute and the Administrative Code allows us to do. We don't have a great deal of latitude, and as much as the public might think that we do, where we do have latitude for certain things is if something is created as part of our administrative procedure, and that's really to ensure that we're adhering to the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, that everybody has due process and equal protection, so that we're not targeting a particular establishment or business owner.
Is the health department a little more strict in food and the food that's served in restaurants, etc., and violations that occur there, and the cleanliness of the food being served, etc., etc.? Do you enforce that to any greater degree, or is it pretty much the same across the board in everything you do?
It's pretty much across the board, and I wouldn't say more strict or less strict. Different establishments that have different requirements, and food establishments certainly have a lot more requirements that they need to adhere to, and that's really guided by the food code that's adopted by each state or each county, as certain states allow, but it's really guided by that. And just to give you an idea of how comprehensive that is, the food code is about 700 pages long.
Wow.
So that's a lot of rules and regulations to know.
Yeah.
So that's where we come in as educators, because it's really impossible to know all of those different things. So I don't think it's really about more or less strict.
Do you know how many hotels and motels you are in charge of, or that you can go in and check on, and how many restaurants? Just ballpark. Is it a huge number?
Well, the number of food establishments is just over 1,400. So that's really, of the almost 2,000, that's really the bulk of it. I couldn't give you a number as far as hotels and lodging establishments specifically.
Mm-hmm. But when you say food establishments, does that include food trucks? Are they considered establishments or no?
Yes, they are. So food trucks are considered mobile food, and then a traditional establishment is what we call brick and mortar.
I could be wrong here. I'm just kind of curious, because I don't know. I'm just reacting as a person in the public who goes out and eats a lot of different places and everything. But I would think mobile trucks would have a more difficult time taking care of their food than a restaurant would, the weather elements especially being involved. Or am I wrong?
Sure, no, that's a factor. There are certain things that food trucks, they have different requirements and different limitations than a brick and mortar. Their menu, for example, you can't have the same menu necessarily in a food truck that you might have in a brick and mortar store because of the limited capacity. Mm-hmm. Food trucks, in a similar fashion, they have to have commercial equipment just like a brick and mortar. So their refrigerators, their cooking units, et cetera, have to be commercial grade. But they do have limited space, which kind of brings about a greater risk of cross-contamination if you can't properly separate your raw meats from your ready-to-eat produce and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But that's why we have limited menus, things that they're able to make.
And so they are limited. They are limited with what they can serve.
They are limited, sure. Yes.
So an example of something they couldn't serve would be?
Well, let's use tamales as an example because that's something that a lot of people like to go out, and it's these kind of these street vendors that go out and move around the county selling those homemade tamales. You're not allowed to cook in your home unless under the cottage food program. But tamales you can't make in there because it requires such a comprehensive process that you're not able to do inside of a mobile food truck. You would require a commissary for that. So a commissary is going to be any permitted food establishment in the county, could be your commissary, or you could go and you use their equipment and their kitchen facilities to prepare that. And then you could sell it in the food truck, but you have to prepare it in a commissary.
I see. Do you find that most of the individuals that when you go out with some members of the health department to check on these various facilities, whether they be hotel, motel, food trucks, restaurants, etc., are they usually pretty cooperative with you, or they kind of go, oh no, they get nervous? And even if they're doing everything right, that, you know, somebody's coming in and can potentially cost me some money or some problems.
No, I think for the most part, everybody is pretty cooperative. I can think of a couple of examples where, you know, people aren't quite happy. A lot of people use, like, they receive 1 of 4 ratings, excellent, satisfactory, needs improvement, or unacceptable. Unacceptable would be we're shutting them down, which happens very rarely. But a lot of people, a lot of food establishments, use those rating cards to kind of advertise their business.
It's like a Michelin thing in a way, on a much lower level,
right,
of course.
So, you know, there's a couple of food establishments that work really hard, and it's a little more difficult in some of the older buildings, and a lot of the buildings in the county are older, and it's a little more difficult to keep them clean and up to those types of standards. So, but I think for the most part, everybody is very cooperative and very kind. They're very understanding. They know that this is just part of their business is being inspected, you know, and these establishments, whether it's the hotel or anybody else, they're just as concerned about protecting the health of their customers as we are, and probably in most cases more so, you know, because that's their business and their livelihood. So
sarcoma, odds are you've never heard that word before. For the 40 people diagnosed with sarcoma every day, it is a life-changing word, because sarcoma is cancer. Through awareness, advocacy, and research, the Sarcoma Foundation of America is bringing hope to the families whose lives have been turned upside down by a cancer they had never heard of until diagnosis. Please join us in the fight to find the cure for sarcoma. For more information on the work of the Sarcoma Foundation of America, go to curesarcoma.org.
Tara, let me ask you, are some of these establishments grandfathered in a certain way that they don't necessarily have to follow the exact same guidelines as some place that's getting ready to open brand new?
No, absolutely not. And kind of piggybacking off of that, we are currently on the 2009 food code. The food code is updated every 4 years. The state of Arizona as a whole has adopted the 2017 food code. They're required to follow the rules and regulations, the guidelines set forth in the food code that's adopted. So as we're in the process of getting transitioned to the 2017 food code, and as soon as that goes through, then we'll start helping these establishments, whatever these changes are, we'll help the establishments move into compliance with whatever new regulations come with this new food code. And they'll be given a particular amount of time. It's not going to be you have 30 days to get this done. And depending on what the issue is, it might be that we give them 6 months or up to a year.
Can you give me an example or two of regulations that have changed? There have been some minor changes, probably not necessarily stand out.
Well, one in particular that's changing is the requirements for food safety managers. Currently, establishments aren't required to have a food safety manager at each establishment location. They can have one for their, so if there's a franchise, they can have one food manager for all of their facilities. But that is going to change as well, that there has to be a certified food safety manager at each location at all times.
Let me ask you about this. This new ordinance that passed in Lake Havasu City. I know we're not going to get too specific about it, but there are some difficulties there that are taking place. It's an amendment to Title 5 of the City Code addressing primarily where and when mobile food units operate and the requirements for business licensing. And they've done this, and it's passed. I don't know what the exact vote was, but it passed. And does it infringe in any way, shape, or form on the health department require?
No, it doesn't infringe on us in any way. And most of the things in this amendment that they've created, really, they involve like the fire safety and general security, refuse and trash disposal, noise restrictions, approved parking areas, and then the penalties and fines. One thing that they did add as part of their application process is the requirement of a commissary, notifying them of who their commissary is and where they're located. But as far as the regulations, there's nothing else in the body of the document that says what the commissary requirements are going to be. So there is a little bit of overlap with what we do at the health department. So for all of our mobile food units, we require them to have a commissary. And there are certain requirements of that. For example, the commissary has to be located in the same county in which your permit is issued. And it's worded a little bit backward, but as far as the statute goes. But they're required to have the commissary. They're required to visit their commissary every 96 hours when they're operational.
Mm-hmm.
They're required to keep a commissary log of their visits and what was done in the commissary for at least 30 days.
All right, this amendment that the city did, what is there in that amendment that is different from before?
You know, to me, it really pertains more to like zoning issues, because I know Lake Havasu, especially right there on Main Street on McCulloch, you know, they have very limited parking and there's a lot of different businesses over there. So they want to keep that parking area free is what I understand. And they're really just trying to get ahead of the situation because food trucks, I mean, they've really been increasing in number over the last one or two decades. And it really starts to boom every time there's an economic downturn.
Uh-huh.
So we've seen about a 15% increase over last year in food truck applications. And the same is true in 2008 when that recession hit. So we're kind of seeing the same pattern there. So I think they're just trying to get ahead of the curve and address the issue before it really becomes an issue.
So if more, would this be correct? They're a little more restrictive in location of the food trucks than before?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. They're only allowed to park in, and I'm not really clear, they can apply for conditional use permits and different types of things. But it essentially, it's where they can park, how long they can be parked there. Like, for example, they're not permitted to occupy more than one parking space, which is really difficult because I think a parking space is about 24 feet long, from my understanding. And a lot of the food trucks are 28, mm-hmm. 30 feet
yeah.
long,
yeah.
you know, so that really prohibits them from parking there. And I know there is a piece of that as well, though, that after the hours of 8 p.m., they can occupy two parking spaces. But I think they're really just trying to make sure that there is available parking along Main Street McCulloch for business patrons.
And so this is mostly, or am I wrong, it's mostly, it sounds like, affecting that downtown area or where they have a lot of the events throughout the year.
Right, right. Well, and but their code really addresses everything in Havasu City, but
yeah.
I think their focus really was, and because I think that's their concern, is that downtown area.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's always been, I've been very much involved in that over the years. It's always been a point of contention in so many ways.
Right.
One of the things you brought up at the very beginning that I find very interesting is the health department is also involved with pet groomers and kennels.
Right, correct.
What do you do exactly regarding that?
Well, mostly with the pet groomers and kennel that we're looking at is, I mean, of course, the sanitary conditions, but then also how they're disposing of their waste. And the same with mobile food units. We have a lot of mobile pet groomers. So a lot of that
yeah.
is how they're disposing of that gray water.
How are they? What's the normal way?
In a similar manner to what a commissary is for a mobile truck, they have, the pet groomers have what they call an other services agreement, so they will contract with, say, one of the RV parks to where they're going to go empty their water that goes into a permitted wastewater treatment facility.
Okay. Are there many of those? You said...
I don't have the numbers on those, but there are quite a few. I know there are at least five or six out in the Havasu area.
Yeah.
But I don't have a definitive number on that.
Don't allow your weight to threaten your health or control your future. Excess weight or obesity can cause emotional and physical health risks. But you can take control. The Your Weight Matters campaign offers free resources and tips to help you measure and understand your weight. Take the Your Weight Matters challenge. The free toolkit prepares you to speak with a healthcare provider about your weight. Your weight does matter. Take the challenge and take control today.
In regard to all these things we're talking about here, can you give me an example? You don't have to name the establishment, but can you give me an example of one of the most egregious, one of the biggest problems that you know about yourself? Now, you haven't been with the department that long, but is there anything in this short period of time that you've been with the county health department that something stands out?
No, there really isn't. I think our inspectors really do a good job of helping the establishments stay in compliance. I think one of the biggest problems, because we do kennels, and so we also permit the animal shelter, and I don't want to say egregious necessarily, but that's one of the most difficult situations because they experience a problem with cockroach infestations.
Yeah.
And it's just the building is so old and dilapidated that, there are so many points of entry for the cockroaches. And it's really hard to try and treat them, to try and abate the cockroaches. And
fortunately, that's going to change this year.
Yes, yeah. I'm so glad for that.
Yes, yeah, me too. New animal shelter, that's going to be absolutely terrific. I don't want to get into the details of this next topic along these lines. But everybody knows about it, and just on a general level, we know the county is in a bit of a budget crisis right now. And the health department is one of the largest departments in the county. Do you think overall you guys have things pretty well under control with the people, the employees that you have now?
You know, I think so. We do have a high turnover rate, just like many other departments in the county. We're often understaffed. My division in particular has three vacancies for inspectors right now, so we're operating on a pretty thin crew. But I don't think the budget affects us as much as some departments, because most of our funding comes from grants. And for my division specifically, about 90-95% of it comes from fees, and those are the fees that we collect as part of the permitting process. So I think we're in a little bit better situation than some of the other departments, just because we have other sources of income.
All right, we've got a few minutes left here. I wanted to ask you, is there anything in preparing for this and having this program, is there anything that you might want to bring up or talk about that we haven't touched on?
I think as a consumer, because a lot more people are eating out now, they get takeout, they get DoorDash, they get they go to the mobile food trucks and places like that. But I think as a consumer, we need to be cognizant of where we're eating and kind of take some accountability and responsibility for our own selves. And just maybe notice when we walk into a food establishment or even cooking in our own homes, the greatest risk factors, and this is really what our inspection protocol is based on. The CDC has the five greatest risk factors for foodborne illness are poor personal hygiene, inadequate cooking and holding temperatures, so temperature abuse, you're not cooking things to the correct temperature, or you're not keeping things hot or cold enough within your refrigerator. Another one is contaminated equipment and tools. If you're not properly cleaning and sanitizing your preparation and cooking surfaces. And then also unsafe food sources. If you're not sure where your food is coming from or if it's coming from a contaminated farmer whose fields have been contaminated. So making sure that, you know, the meat is USDA approved and things of that nature is important.
All right. Well, we're kind of at the end of the program here. I've talked about a lot of different things. I want to thank you very much, Tara. I just one little thing I want to ask. When you go into a restaurant in Mojave County and you sit down to eat, do you think that you notice the little things a little bit more than the average person out there because of your job?
Well, sure. In my profession, I certainly do. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of times we get complaints on food establishments for their dining areas. Well, we don't inspect their dining areas. But as a consumer, if you walk in and to a restaurant and their dining room is filthy, you know, best bet is to assume that their kitchen is probably not much better. So, you know, I think I do notice. I try not to notice because some of the food is really amazing. But,
I
think so.
All right. Tara Stanek, and she is the Environmental Health Manager of the Mojave County Health Department. Thank you very much, and very glad you had the opportunity to chat with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Roger.
To Your Health with Dr. Chad Kingsley, Mojave County Public Health Director, and Roger Galloway. Be healthy. Stay healthy. Here's To Your Health.